Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. Two major Maine politicians staked out positions this week on two controversial issues. For Republican Senator Susan Collins, it was President Trump's national emergency declaration, as you'll hear in a few minutes. Democratic Governor Janet Mills has taken sides on an issue that's about transmitting electric power.
Introducing the New England Clean Energy Connect, a project by Central Maine Power to deliver up to 1,200 megawatts of hydropower from Quebec through Maine to Massachusetts. The
New England but it's Clean also Energy getting easy Connect. To see this as a political fight.
I oppose.
We oppose the CMP corridor.
Because it threatens our natural beauty, wildlife habitat, and tourism economy. Join
those. So, as our Political Pulse team of Mal Leary and Steve Missler point out, it was a potential turning point when Governor Mills this week said she is backing the transmission line's construction.
She's framed her decision to support this project in a way that's sort of like regional. Yeah, she was holding up this cube of carbon at the jet port yesterday and saying, you know, this project will help with carbon emissions, which will help with climate change. And even though Mainers won't be benefiting from the electricity that comes through our state, ratepayers will get some sort of benefit and by way of a reduction in their bills. And also there's all a host of other benefits like electric car charging stations. I think, you know, by and large, the benefits package was what persuaded her to get on board with this, which is really a 180-degree turn from where she was on the campaign. The question, I think, really, is whether or not that benefit package is enough in the eyes of Mainers, because I really see this as a real political trap for her in a lot of ways, because there is so much organized opposition to this. It's basically, it's almost like an election campaign with ads. I mean, there's ads in the newspapers, there's ads on television, there's ads on your computer. And it's just, and I also think there's a lot of grassroots opposition to the project too, especially in the affected communities where this line is going to come down through. So I expect that this is not the first stage in this, and it's not the first stage of political peril for the governor.
Yeah, I suspect what's coming eventually, now this is going to go through a regulatory process, but looming out there, I would assume, is a potential citizen initiative.
That's always an issue, and particularly when you have folks as wound up as they are on this issue. The politics here, we really don't know all of the machinations that's going on with the governor. As to the regulatory procedures you're talking about, they're going to change too, because she gets to nominate a new PUC chairman next month. Now, is that person going to take part in this proceedings? If not, then two commissioners, instead of all three, get to decide this issue. We're talking a political minefield here for the governor and her administration, because the potential for blowback from citizens, particularly the closer you get to where that corridor is located, it becomes very, very real. And to your point of a citizens initiative, that's always possible.
The other thing, too, just to build off that a little bit, is that there are towns along this line that don't want this. Okay, and if you go into the public record of this proceeding, there's over 1,000 comments about this proposal. I would encourage everybody that has the time to read this thing, because it is loaded with curiosities and things that should, you know, invite some scrutiny. For example, the town of Carrituck has passed a moratorium, you know, against transmission line projects. This particular project needs to go through Carrituck. And the question has come up during these proceedings, okay, well, what if CMP, if you cannot get local approval for this project, what happens next? Well, that means they're going to have to go to the PUC. So you would have effectively an instance where a small community that opposes the project could get bigfooted by a state regulatory agency. And according to the CMP person who was testifying, that has never happened before. So that's a minefield, to use Mal's vernacular, in and of itself. And there's all kinds of other things, too. I mean, the proponents of this project and the opponents have been going around to these various communities and cutting deals. For example, the town of Whitefield met with people from Central Maine Power to discuss a way to get fiber optics into the line somehow that would benefit their community. And they basically hatched out a handshake agreement over blueberry pie on a plastic picnic table in Skowhegan to do this. This is not an official agreement. There's no MOU. This is a handshake deal. So how many of those out there are just lurking that are not part of the stipulation agreement that the governor has signed on to? Those are a lot of little surprises and minefields that await anybody who's getting on board with this project.
And I think you could be certain, Irwin, that this is going to come up in the legislature. They have plenty of opportunities with the titles that are before the Energy and Utilities Committee to have an impact on this whole process. It's multi-track here. It's going to be unfolding in the legislature. It's going to be unfolding in the regulatory process.
One of the big parts of this benefit package is subsidies for low-income ratepayers in Maine. Well, there was one analysis out where that subsidy, which spans 40 years, comes out to be $1.40 a month in savings off the average electricity user's bill. Is that enough to get Maine people on board with a project which they don't otherwise benefit from? I mean, yes, there are car charging stations in this proposal. Mainers are one of the least per capita to buy an electric vehicle. Now, there's a chicken and egg here situation where you have to have car charging stations in order to encourage electric vehicle use. But there's also a market issue with electric cars, which is price. And we haven't seen many electric vehicles, you know, that fit the Mainers of median income.
And just one final data point, and then we'll move on. But the Natural Resources Council, which is the state's largest environmental group, is also opposed to this. And of course, they may very well have the ability to initiate a citizen initiative and push something like that forward. Another politician who has staked out a position in the last week, Republican Senator Susan Collins, who has come out very firmly against President Trump's declaration of a national emergency in order to gain the power to amass the money to build a better barrier along the southern border. Senator Collins this week told the editorial board of the Portland Press-Herald that she supports the lawsuit Maine and 15 other states have filed against this, and that she would vote for a resolution ending the national emergency if one emerges from the House.
Well, what she has really said there, Irwin, is that she will support a resolution that is a, quote, clean resolution that simply disapproves what the president has done. And the process under which this operates, it's going to spread over much of March. But she's been very careful to say it's going to be a clean resolution. And what she's fearful of is what often happens in the legislature and in Congress, where you hang on unaffiliated issues onto a particular resolution to try to make a point. And she's saying, I can go along with the idea of just disapproving, but I don't want any of this other stuff or I can't vote for it. So we have to be clear in pointing out that her support is not unqualified. Her support is very qualified.
But Steve Mistler, her support is also in the minority so far among Republicans. Is she taking a big chance doing this?
I don't think so, because there's just not a critical mass of Republicans that would ultimately be supportive of a resolution to block the president. Perhaps if there were a critical mass of Republicans to do that, she would also have cover in that situation, too, I suspect, if there were just that, if there were enough of them. So she is sort of hanging out there a little bit on her own. But she's also, you know, if there is a, you know, there is a clean resolution to block this emergency declaration, and assuming that she votes for it, it's also not going to pass. So she's going to fall victim, I think, to some criticism, perhaps, that she's standing for something that doesn't have a chance.
I think it has a pretty good shot of passing the Congress. I was talking with Representative Jared Golden, who supports the resolution. He's saying, look, I'm supporting this and we're going to go through this process. But I think the real issue is going to be solved in the courts. It's not going to be solved through this disapproval resolution because he doesn't see, and I think I agree with him, a two-thirds vote in either the House or Senate to override a presidential veto. So what we're looking at here is a lot of maneuvering to put political pressure on the White House and, quite frankly, to send a message to the courts that a majority of the Congress disapprove of this action.
Collins, of course, up for re-election in 2 years if she wants to run. I mean, one of the reasons I asked about risk as well, I mean, does she risk hurting herself with the Republican base by looking weak on immigration because she doesn't approve of this.
Republicans, while they're supportive of the president and pushing for the wall, I don't think they're that ginned up for the wall itself, okay? That seems evident in some of the polls. So I don't know that she's going to really upset Republicans writ large, but she will, of course, upset the Trump base, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a distinction to be made there. So I think she's probably safe, but maybe not so much with the Trump base. It wouldn't be so perilous for her to stake out such a position.
A couple other things quickly to touch on. We finally did learn from the Maine Sunday Telegram just roughly how much the last administration spent staying at the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. And Mal, apparently on one night, they actually spent $1,100 for a room.
And that's amazing. I also caught one of the items there is a $56 meal for one filet mignon. That must have been one really good filet mignon for $56. This whole issue from the past administration, we're going to continue to see things that they did coming out because they stonewalled. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They stonewalled all of us in the media that had filed requests. I mean, if they wanted to make a document available, you got it within a couple of hours. If they didn't, there are people still waiting for requests that are now having to be fulfilled by the Bills administration, who is basically spending more time fulfilling requests from the LePage administration era than of what they're doing. You know, if you think about it for a bit, it is kind of absurd.
Well, the other thing, just politically, too, which is interesting to me, is that stories like that, if they continue to come out, they continue to be damaging to Governor LePage, even though he's no longer the governor. I mean, this is a person who has signed on as an honorary chairman, as some sort of de facto part of the Mills resistance, like, if for lack of a better term, you know, announced apparently that he's going to move back to Maine and lead this nonprofit organization to, you know, counter her every move. Well, when you have stories like that, that really sort of strike to the heart of this fiscal conservative, you know, lavish spending, you know, $50 filet mignons, $1,100 nights at hotels, you know, you kind of lose a little bit of that, of your standing, your ideological standing when there's stories like that floating around out there, you know? And, you know, just, and one other thing I'll mention is this curiosity buried in that story about a trip to Russia. And now, according to the visa documents, that trip to Russia, which was ultimately canceled, was ostensibly to promote Maine as a tourism destination. Yet it's really hard for Russian tourists to visit this state. They're not on this 38-country list where people can apply for basically expedited travel visas. So I don't really understand how why the governor and his staff were out there trying to recruit tourists, were planning to, and then decided not to. It just doesn't compute.
And you've got the real situation where some conservative Republican lawmakers privately are saying, really? He didn't look at the cost of the hotel rooms? I mean, this is a guy who, you know, read everything that he got as governor. I know because I FOIA'd a lot of documents, and they would be hand-marked by him where he had read them and noted on action for some commissioner to take. So for him to say that he wasn't aware of the cost is just so surprising to some of these lawmakers. They're saying, you know, come on, this just does not ring right.
Lastly, I've been working on a story we'll be rolling out soon about new members of the legislature, rookies. And so I guess I'm just curious to find out from you guys who are up there at the State House complex, do all the newbies seem to be finding their committee rooms the way they're supposed to be?
They do, and it's interesting. I noticed that some of the freshmen, there's these little side rooms all sprinkled throughout the State House, and I often see the freshmen in with either members of leadership or staffers. I haven't actually barged in to see what they're talking about, but they look to be sort of like tutorial sessions, you know, basically extended orientation for the freshmen, which I think is probably a good idea. There's a lot of little things to learn here that you don't learn in a one-day orientation.
And there's a real effort underway by leadership in both parties and from the support staff in the House and Senate to hold these sort of you know, this is how procedure works. I mean, some of the parliamentary procedure in the Maine legislature is unique to the legislature. There are times when a vote to do something is really to kill something. And until you understand that, you know, you could jump to a lot of conclusions about your colleagues and which way they're voting. So there's a lot of effort to try to bring people up to speed, because it's not going to be very many weeks now before we're going to start seeing some votes on major issues. That's where we're going to see this training hopefully come to fruition.
Steve Missler and Mal Leary, that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. Catch abbreviated versions of The Pulse each Monday on Morning Edition. Our next podcast will be part of next Sunday's Weekend Edition and also be available online, too. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. I'm Erwin Gratz.